your hometown newspaper of the air brings you What's Doing in Western Michigan. What's Doing in Western Michigan, a transcribed roundup of the news and views from the cities, towns, and countryside of Western Michigan as reported in the daily and weekly newspapers received in the WKZO newsroom. Your reporter, Dr. Willis Dunbar.
Good afternoon. There was a little bit of everything in Western Michigan last week. Fires, strikes, manhunts, and civic arguments in court were among the items reported during the week. A disastrous fire destroyed the main building of the Ionia Livestock Auction headquarters just outside of Ionia, according to the Ionia Sentinel Standard. A number of head of cattle were destroyed in the blaze, and at the height of the fire, it was necessary to fire rifles and shotguns into the blaze to kill the animals before they were burned to death. One fortunate detail in the fire was the fact that an auction had been held the previous day, and many of the purchasers had already taken away the cattle that they had purchased. Officials of the company which sponsored the auctions plan to rebuild the burned building in the near future. Ionia also had its share of excitement in a manhunt, which was termed one of the greatest manhunts in Ionia history by the Ionia Sentinel Standard. Four convicts of the Ionia Reformatory broke loose, and two of them were captured shortly after their escape, but the other two were reported to have been seen in a field just outside Belding. For an entire afternoon, the efforts of 250 men, using 30 police cars and three airplanes, were devoted to the search for the fugitives. When night fell, the law enforcement officers were forced to give up their search, and at last report, the people who had escaped had not been captured. But the people of Ionia and Belding are still talking about the excitement. In fact, the Belding Banner News reported that the residents of that town took many extra precautions that night to guard against a chance meeting with these fugitives. Children were kept home, doors which hadn't been locked in many years were bolted tight, and everyone in general thought twice before they ventured outside during the evening. At Hopkins, the school board is caught in the middle of a strike which may disrupt school schedules there this fall. The school board was thinking of granting a contract for electrical work on a school addition to a firm from Allegan, a non-union firm, according to the Allegan Gazette. Another company, this one a union outfit, threatened to picket the project if the contract were given to anyone other than union workers. So the Hopkins School Board, which had hoped to have its new $165,000 school addition done in time for school this year, will have to sit tight and see what develops. The Allegan Gazette also reported a bit of excitement which took place in Judge Andrews' court in Allegan. The plaintiff in an alleged stolen car case got very angry when he learned that charges against the defendant were to be dropped, so he tried to sock the defendant in the jaw. Well, the judge turned the tables and the plaintiff became the defendant in a contempt of court case, and he ended up with 5 days in jail. The judge dismissed charges against the other man, who said that he had been sent to repossess the car and did not steal it. Speaking of judges, Judge Raymond Fox of Kalamazoo took over the St. Joseph County Circuit Court last week during the illness of Judge Theo Jacobs, and he found the court a pretty busy place during his stay. Most of the cases which were heard by Judge Fox were routine matters, but the dispute between the Three Rivers City government and a number of city employees was given a great deal of publicity. A few weeks ago, the city employees down at Three Rivers filed a motion asking for an injunction against the city government, restraining city officials from going ahead with construction plans on an automatic municipal pumping and lighting plant. The five men who filed the motion contend that there aren't funds available to carry out the construction and that a number of other factors make the entire project unlawful. Well, Judge Fox granted a temporary injunction to halt action on the project, and September the 2nd has been set as the hearing date. That's next Friday, and if Judge Fox is still in Centerville at that time, he'll sit in on the hearing. But if Judge Jacobs is able to do so, he will preside. Court officials and the public in general are hoping for a speedy recovery for Judge Jacobs, for although Judge Fox has done an excellent job there, he's needed for work here in Kalamazoo. The Three Rivers Commercial reported the details of the dispute and also told that the city government intended to fight for its original plan. The Sturgis Journal estimated last week that about 15,000 people had been on hand for the White Pigeon Day's celebration. Among those present were four descendants of Chief White Pigeon, for whom the town was named. Speaking of festivals, the Nashville News seems to be quite deeply concerned about the fact that Nashville doesn't have any celebration there at any time during the summer. There was an editorial in last week's Nashville News which pointed out that almost all the neighboring towns of any size had summer festivals of one kind or another. Towns mentioned were Vermontville, Bellevue, Olivet, Lake Odessa, Woodland, and Middleville, but not Nashville. So, the news wants to know just how much longer the people in Nashville are going to sit around and do nothing while other towns enjoy themselves. Now for some of the features in the news, here's my colleague Harry Travis.
Well, the people in Greenville who know all about everything are stumped for once. There's an animal on a farm near Greenville which resembles both a calf and a deer, and the experts can't figure out which it should be called. It has many characteristics of both, according to the Greenville Daily News. For one thing, its bone structure resembles that of a calf, but its movements resemble those of a deer. It has a short, fuzzy tail, like a deer, and yet many other features are the same as those of a Jersey calf. At any rate, no one has figured out yet what to call the animal, and it's still the subject of much discussion among the farmers of the Greenville area. Almost every city in the United States has a downtown parking problem, but how many can boast of a parking lot loaned to the city by a private citizen who's just interested in helping out with the problem? The Holland Evening Sentinel reports that Ernest Brooks of Holland has consented to let the police use some of his property as a parking lot. Brooks furnished the land, and the city will furnish the police patrol. Approximately 40 cars can be accommodated in the lot at one time. That's real civic spirit. A 23-year-old girl in Greenville had her first automobile ride last week. She's Linda Laucas, a former citizen of Riga, Latvia. Linda arrived in Greenville last week coming from a displaced persons camp in Europe. When she got off the train in Grand Rapids, her sponsors, Mr. and Mrs. Edwin Peterson, drove her to Greenville in their car, and that was the first time in her life that Linda had set foot in an automobile. According to the Greenville Daily News, everything is all new and bewildering to Linda. When she asked about a shiny appliance which she saw in the Peterson home, it developed that the appliance was the first washing machine Linda had ever seen.
By the way, Harry, did you see that picture of Linda in the Greenville Daily News?
No, I didn't see that. Can you tell me something about
that? Well, I certainly can. Linda is a very fine-looking girl, and my guess is that she'll have a chance to take a lot more automobile rides when the boys up at Greenville take a look at her.
Well, the residents of the area east of Plainwell on M89 were given all the free cement they wanted one day last week. That is, if they could find a use for some cement on short notice. A truck bound from Muskegon to Richland overturned on the highway, spilling 17 tons of dry cement. It was easier to give the cement away than it would have been to load it back in the truck. So the cement was offered first come, first serve. The Allegan Gazette reported that the highway was blocked for 8 hours while the wreckage and the cement was cleared away. And now, back to Dr. Dunbar.
And we're back to Centerville again, Harry, with another problem about the name of that town. You know, last Sunday we reported that Centerville residents were complaining about the fact that a lot of the mail for that town often was missent to Centerline, Michigan, causing a delay in mail delivery. The post office has promised to do something about that problem, but the current edition of the Centerville Observer has again brought up a very old issue, the correct way to spell Centerville. For years, there's been a dispute as to whether the name should be spelled C-E-N-T-R-E or C-E-N-T-E-R. The courts use one spelling and the railroads and the post office use another. Well, last week, Postmaster Frank Mandigo printed a questionnaire and asked for opinions on the problem. Mandigo says that hereafter, he'll abide by the preference of the majority. But even if the residents of the town should adopt a uniform rule on spelling, how about all those directories of various kinds all over the nation? Some use one and some use the other spelling. We notice that the Observer sticks to the spelling used by the courts, C-E-N-T-R-E. Everyone in Belding ought to be envious of 16-year-old Maria Wester. The Belding Banner News announced last week that Maria was the winner of $1,000 first prize in a nationwide essay contest. The contest was conducted by the veterans of foreign wars. It had thousands of entries from all over the United States. Belding is mighty proud of Maria, and she's very happy about the prize. She intends to use it to help finance her studies at the University of Michigan when she graduates from high school. An argument over drain assessments in Vicksburg is going to be heard in a special meeting at the Vicksburg School Building tomorrow morning. The Vicksburg Commercial reports that the assessment had been approved or passed, but that three residents of the area have protested, claim that the distribution of the assessment is unfair and that they are going to have to pay too much. At any rate, a board of review will pass final judgment on the situation at tomorrow's meeting in Vicksburg. A big school election in Brunson is scheduled for Tuesday, according to the Brunson Journal. The voters will get three ballots. One is a proposal to build a $98,000 elementary school, and then the voters will also decide upon the site for the school, should it be built. It's quite a complication on that, by the way. Michigan law requires a minimum of 5 acres for the site of an elementary school. And another specification is that there has to be 1 acre for every 100 pupils in the school. With 700 elementary pupils, the new Brunson school would require at least 7 acres of space. There's news today of two homecoming celebrations at the city of Lakeview. A crowd estimated at 8,000 persons took part in the homecoming there. According to the Lakeview Enterprise, the parade was the best feature of the day, with several nice floats and displays. And the village of Climax is going to put on a homecoming next weekend, starting on Friday and continuing through Labor Day. The Climax Crescent reports that this year's event is supposed to be the biggest Labor Day celebration in many years. In Charlotte, the opening of Eaton County's 4-H Fair is scheduled for next Tuesday with a full program of exhibits and entertainment. According to the Charlotte Republican Tribune, different high school bands will furnish the music on different days, along with an American Legion band from Charlotte. This fair over at Charlotte concentrates pretty much on displays and contests of farm products. It's a 4-H fair. It doesn't put as much emphasis as some of the fairs do on entertainment and noise. The result is a fair with plenty of fine exhibits and excellent competition. We hope to bring you a tape-recorded broadcast from Charlotte before the week is over. When school starts in Lowell next week, the new addition will be open to public inspection. It costs in the neighborhood of $125,000. It will do much to remedy the crowded conditions in the Lowell schools, according to the Lowell Ledger. The school authorities are so proud of the new building that they've invited parents to come down for an open house on the 6th of September and look the place over. Well, it's still a little while in the future, but the Colin Magic Show is beginning to make news. The Sturgis Journal reported last week all about the preparations for this annual show. Percy Abbott, whose activities in the world of magicians has brought nationwide fame to the town of Colon, is directing plans for the show. The first official activity this time will be a sort of a preview party on Wednesday the 7th of September, with the actual celebration getting underway the following day. Magicians from all over the world, you know, come to Colon for this annual affair. Belding, Lawrence, and Newaygo are other towns planning for the celebration of Labor Day. The Newaygo Republican reports that fun and a happy-go-lucky spirit will be the main features of the event there. Of course, there'll be the usual collection of concessions, ball games, and entertainments. Now here's your announcer with a brief word about the weather. And that's what's doing in Western Michigan, a transcribed roundup of the news and views from the cities, towns, and countryside of Western Michigan, heard every Sunday on WKZO at 4:30 p.m. Listen in again next week for your hometown newspaper of the air and what's doing in Western Michigan.